All right, find Joshua chapter 1 with me, if you're able. Brother Randy, you can have Michelle show you where that is. So, I'm picking with Brother Reisinger. Randy and Michelle Reisinger were longtime members here, and while he was in school, he not only went to school and worked full-time, but they were full-time in the church here too in various and sundry capacities. And it's been, 12 years since you graduated? Okay, wow, 14, okay. You don't look a day older than 12 years out of school. So. But he served as pastor of a church in Canada for a long time, and they're back in Maine. And there's no lack of demand for his help there. There's a number of churches there in Maine that they're able to minister with in addition to being a deacon there at their home church, but it's always good to see you guys, and glad they're able to be with us today. And if I've stalled long enough, he probably found Joshua chapter 1 by now. All right, so we're just now getting started on Joshua. Last week, we looked at the introductory material and said that basically Joshua chapter 1 is the continuation of Deuteronomy 34, okay? God told Moses, because of his disobedience in striking the rock the second time, that he would not personally lead the children of Israel over into the promised land. And so God appointed Joshua to that task. Moses prepared him as best that he could. And then in chapter 34, the death of Moses is recorded. In Joshua chapter 1, and this is kind of where we left off last week in verse number 2, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of their foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even to the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. So I left the map up here to start with, just as a refresher. What is Joshua's task? All right, so the map here, the different colored areas are the different regions, the land of Canaan. You can see on the lower left in that pinkish color is Philistia. The Philistines, their major cities were for the most part near the coast of the Mediterranean. And then you have the Hittites, which were one of the dominant groups, and that covered a lot of the inland areas there. To the north there, you see Phoenicia. That would be Tyre and Sidon. On the east and southeast, you have Ammon, Moab, and Edom. Those are areas God said he would not give to Israel. Edom, that's the descendants of Esau. Moab and Ammon were the two illegitimate sons of Lot. God said that because they were the family of Lot and had the connection with Abraham, he was going to give them their peace. God said, I'm not going to give you theirs. But everything else that you see there in the pink and yellow and green different colors was area that God had promised them. When it says the great sea, towards the going down of the sun, of course, that's the Mediterranean there to the west. And he said the great river, the river Euphrates, where is that on the map? To the east, and considerably further than where this particular map outlines, okay? But it said from the wilderness, which is down here in the general region that's marked for Amalek, the wilderness, today that would be called the Negev, in the south, kind of between what is Israel and Egypt, or now it's really kind of southern Israel. If I understand it correctly, the territory of Israel just about touches the tip of the Red Sea now. But then, it says to the north, it was the mountain which they could see vaguely from where they were. But this is the area. But as you see, it already has labels and owners, which means when Joshua was tasked with leading the people in, they were not rolling out the welcome, we're glad you're here banner, the red carpet, and it was not trumpets and fanfare reception. Okay, so when we look at the task that's given to Joshua, we see Joshua's promotion, and then we see the problem he was facing. It was twofold. Number one, the problem was that we see there in the first phrase of verse number two, Moses, my servant, is dead. we talked about that if you live long enough, you're going to die. I know that's deep, but, try to handle that early on a Sunday morning. It happens to the best. It happens to the worst of us. But when somebody who's greatly respected and very influential moves off the scene, whether it's a longtime faithful pastor, whether it's a political leader, and there's a time of transition, it's difficult to fill that role, to fill those shoes. But, think about what are some of the major things that from a human perspective, obviously it was God's power, but from a human perspective, what are things that were credited to Moses? What are some of the major events that he led that the people saw Moses being used of God to accomplish? Let him out of Egypt, crossing the Red Sea. What happened before those two things? No, that was after the crossing of the Red Sea. What happened before that? 10 plagues, yeah. Going and sticking his finger in Pharaoh's face and saying, if you don't let the people go, this is going to happen. And sometimes we think, okay, day one it was this, and day two it was this, and it really wasn't. I mean, some of those things lasted a week or two. Very realistically, the timeline of the plagues was 3 to 6 months. You had a period of plague and then kind of a downtime, and then it became obvious Pharaoh wasn't honoring his agreement. You had another plague. But, some things lasted a week, some of them a few days, whatever. But, even if it was just 1 week per plague between the lead-up time and then the actual plague time and all that, it gives you 10 weeks. But over that period of time, God is continually confirming his hand on Moses. You have the plagues, and then you have the release from Egypt and the crossing of the Red Sea. All right, well, then once they get across, what else did Moses do? I mean, they get to the water and they can't drink it. What did Moses do? Cut down the tree and make the bitter water sweet, right? And then they get to Mount Sinai and something happens that no nation before or after had ever seen. Remember Exodus 19 and 20, the mount starts to smoke and there's earthquakes and the sound of a trumpet. And I think the way it's phrased in Exodus chapter 20, that they actually heard the voice of God out loud saying what we call the Ten Commandments in that basic format of the law. Then Moses got called up on the mountain to get it in written form. And he was up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. There's the smoke and the earthquakes and the evidence of the presence of God. Moses went up there and then he lived to tell about it. Right? And then when they said, you brought us out here in the wilderness to die. We don't have anything to eat. What did Moses tell them they were going to eat? The manna, which ended up lasting 40 years. And then you have water from the rock. And you have list after list after list after list. So if you got somebody that's got a resume like this, they're highly respected, right? They've been greatly used of God. Do you want to sign up to be the next leader after that guy? Do you want to be constantly compared to that guy? So from a human perspective, Moses was greatly used of God. He was greatly missed. But from a human perspective, there's a little bit of intimidation. Here's the key. Was Moses a faithful man of God who was used? Yes. But in everything that we've talked about, the power came from what source? From God. It was God's power. And as we're going to see here in Joshua chapter 1, God told Joshua, as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. And here's the key. From a human perspective, we can measure ourselves. And if we're full of pride, we can say, well, I'm obviously better than them. But we can also measure ourselves and say, there's no way I can measure up to them. The key is not how I measure up. The key is the power of God with me. And so you got a problem. Moses is dead. And so now the task falls to Joshua. Moses is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people unto the land which I do give them. So you have Moses is dead. Now you lead, Joshua. That's the problem. And then we see the plan of God. Arise. go over the Jordan. Verse 3, every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. Now, arise is significant. Why? I mean, Moses died, there was going to be a period of mourning. And mourning and grieving has its appropriate place and time. But has God intended for that to be forever? No. There's a period of time of mourning. And I mean, there's two extremes, and both of them are wrong. To move on extremely fast and not take time to grieve and acknowledge the hurt and that kind of thing. And the other extreme is to never move on and to just live in the mourning and grief forever. Neither one of those are God's design. But here he said, all right, Moses is dead. Acknowledged. We've had a period of mourning. Now it's time to get up and move on. If they don't arise, are they going to make any forward progress? No. And there's a time for resting. There's a time for remembering. But there's also a time for moving forward. It's time to go forward. Arise. Go over this Jordan. So, is God going to be with Joshua? Yes. But does Joshua have responsibility? Yes. Will Joshua see the hand of God on his life if he does not go?
No.
If he does not fulfill his command that God gave him, then he will not see the blessings and the promises either. Okay? Now, you see the plan of God. It's, you know, arise and go. He said, every place the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you. Joshua was one of only two men living at this point who had already walked the actual territory God was going to give him. You know, by this point, Joshua and Caleb are the only ones that are remaining of the spies that went in and the prior generation. And so he knew in greater detail than the other people did what this promise meant. I'm going to give you every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon. Okay, so you have the plan of God. Get up and get going. When the alarm goes off in the morning, that's not really what we want to hear, right? Get up and get going. I mean, eventually though, you know, for most of us, I think, we would rather get up and get going than just have to sit there and twiddle our thumbs all day, right? Even if you can't do as much as you want to do, you know, you'd rather be going and doing. But here, the responsibility is to go and do what God had given him. Number three, we see the preparation of Joshua. Now, where do we see the preparation of Joshua? Back in verse number one. Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying. You see the preparation? Where is it? Two-word little phrase right there, Moses' minister. That was the preparation. Now, when Joshua was Moses' helper, I don't think he ever dreamed, boy, I would love to take Moses' spot. I mean, it was amazing that when they got to Mount Sinai and God speaks out loud to the people and God called Moses up and gave him a little bit. And he said, now you go back down and you set boundaries and you command him. He said, I already told him. He said, God said, go back down there and tell him again. I know these people better than you do. Okay, so he went back down there and he told them, and then God summoned Moses back up and Moses went up the mount. Joshua went part of the way up the mount. How do we know that? In Exodus 32, the parenthetical there with the golden calf, when Moses came back down the mountain, who did he meet on the way back down? Joshua. Joshua was there waiting on him. Everybody else, and Joshua had no idea what was going on in the camp. I mean, if Joshua had been in the camp, he would have known what the noise was. Joshua went part way up the mountain with Moses as well. But at that point in time, he just thought, man, this is awesome. I get to help Moses, and I get to see some of what God's doing. This is great. He had no idea what would be in store. But what did he do? Whatever Moses needed. I mean, prior to this, Joshua was the one that led the army. In Exodus chapter 17, when they came out, if you remember on the map, Amalek was there in the southern portion, south of the Dead Sea. Amalek came out to fight against Israel. And eventually, God would judge them for that. Do any of you remember in 1 Samuel chapter 15, who did God send to judge Amalek? In 1 Samuel 15, that's where we get this phrase, to obey is better than sacrifice and to hearken than the fat of rams. Rebellion is as a sin of witchcraft. Stubbornness as iniquity and idolatry. Who was told that? King Saul. Why was he told that? Because in 1 Samuel 15, God sent Saul, and this was the expression, I remember what Amalek did. That was how God introduced his command. I remember what Amalek did. Now go utterly destroy them. Did Saul utterly destroy them? No, he saved the king alive and they saved the best of the animals and all of that. But what I'm saying is that was over 300 years later. And when God said, I remember what Amalek did. But when they first came out, Amalek came out to fight against Israel. They were cousins, I think descendant through the line of Esau. And you know they were not interested in Israel coming and taking back the land. That is when Moses told Joshua, you go lead the army and fight. Now, I mean, at this point, we assume Joshua was somewhere between 20 and 40. Okay, how much military experience did he have at this point? What was his resume to this point? Slave in Egypt. Birth to present. I mean, what else do you put on the resume? Okay, he said, Joshua, you go lead the army. Yes, sir. What are you going to do? I'm going to be up here on the hill with the rod of God. And when he held up the rod, Israel was winning. When his arms got tired, well, that's Joshua down there. Did Joshua have any idea that 40 years later, that kind of experience would be used by God when it's like, all right, go into Canaan and conquer the land and divide it up for an inheritance? No idea. He had a front row seat, though, on Mount Sinai, and then in the water from the rock, and in all of those things. He had no idea in what way God was preparing him for future service. Which is why we should tell our kids and our grandkids, do your best in every opportunity you have. You have no idea how God's going to use this experience and this opportunity to serve somewhere else. But same thing's true for us. You know, if God has us somewhere, even if we're serving and doing what we can, what we learn now will be used in a future step as we continue to serve the Lord. But he's Moses' minister. Okay, the term minister here, there's two words for minister, and this is a similar word to what was used of Moses as well, I think. But there's one, the term minister means servant. But there's one term that means like a household servant or a slave, and another term that it's servant, but it's a little more of a higher position, like the minister of defense or the minister of foreign affairs, you know, that kind of a thing. This was of more like a personal assistant nature, but nonetheless, he was Moses' minister. As Moses' minister, he saw all the miracles that we just talked about with Moses a few minutes ago. He saw the presence of God. He saw the golden calf. He saw how Moses dealt with that. He saw Moses' face glow when he came back down off the mountain and had to wear a veil over his face. He saw the water from the rock and the quails and the manna and the victories over Sihon and Og and all of those things. He saw it. He was there. He was part of the group that set up the tabernacle as they were doing all that. And God would use all of those things later in his life. But understand this. No man who is unwilling to serve is qualified to lead. That's a Bible principle. Jesus said, whoever will be greatest, let him be your what? Servant or minister. I mean, in different gospels, it's different words, but the same meaning. And he that will be chief, let him be your minister. That's repeated in at least three of the four gospels, if not all four. And in Philippians chapter 2, we're told that Jesus Christ took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. That has always been God's pattern. You learn to serve, and then you become a servant leader. How many times did David, after he became king, refer to his people of the nation of Israel as these sheep? He learned to take care of sheep, and taking care of the children of Israel wasn't a whole lot different sometimes. But that was not a menial task. But here, Moses had a servant named Joshua. Because Joshua was faithful as a servant, well, then God gave him a position, you know, as a leader, but that is always God's pattern. Have you ever worked under somebody who kind of worked their way up? They knew the entry-level position, and they worked in different departments, and they became a manager, and you know, maybe they've been there, you know, all their life, but they worked in the different areas. And then you worked, maybe you work under somebody that has the title of, you know, general manager or supervisor or whatever, because their last name is the same as the owner of the company. Is there a difference in how they operate? I mean, the one who had to work up usually is a little more sympathetic or a little more understanding of how things work. And usually that flavors how they work with people, understanding their jobs and so forth. And God uses that with us too. But I'm just saying, if you want to be used of God, be a servant where you are. And God put you somewhere else. Here we see Moses, my servant, is dead, but Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, minister, is the next leader. So we have a problem, we have a plan, and we have the preparation. He'd seen the presence of God. He'd seen the miracles of God. He'd seen the victories of God in all the time, the 40 years leading up to this. But now we get to the promise of God. Verse number 5. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. You remember what Elisha asked for when Elijah said it, you know, if you can have one request, what do you want? What did Elisha ask for? A double portion of his spirit. What he said is, I want the hand of God to be on me like it is on you, Elijah. I mean, is there anybody here that would not say, love to have the hand of God on my life like it was for Moses? I mean, that's a fantastic promise, is it not? As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. And then God goes a step further. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. As I was with Moses. You know, this is a comparison. Has Joshua seen the I will be with thee part yet? No. But has he seen the as I was with Moses part? Yeah. Everything that we've listed, let's review that whole resume and life experience. Joshua saw how God was with Moses in coming to Pharaoh and saying, let my people go, and calling down the plagues and bringing them out and all of the miracles, and even through the murmurings in the wilderness and all of that. He's seen how God's hand has been on Moses. You ever wonder if he went back to his tent that night and thought, God's hand be on me like it was on Moses? Really? I mean, I could have the power of God like Moses did? Let me ask you a question. What limit do you and I have to having the same thing? I mean, is it a different God that promised Joshua and Moses these things that we pray to? Or is it the same God? Has his power diminished over the years? Has his, you know, has age caught up with him? Has his bank account run dry? No, the power of God is the same today as it was with Moses. And you and I can have the hand of God in the same way. I mean, I think about it and go, man, that'd be awesome. But if we look at the New Testament, we see that God has promised the same things to us, right? He said in Hebrews 13:5, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. We see in the same way that we're told in I believe it's in Colossians, you know, Christ in you, the hope of glory. What is that? The power of God available to us if we are obedient and, you know, submissive and clean servants of the Lord. Here, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. Okay, and he goes on to say, it's in the prior phrase in verse 5, there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. That phrase there is very emphatic. It's intensive. It is, Doesn't matter how hard they try, they will not stand before you, Joshua, as long as you have my power on your side. They will not stand before thee. It was God who gave Moses the power to do all of these things that we've talked about. And it was God whose hand would allow Joshua to do the same thing. You know, we can look at some of the folks here and say, you know, wow, I wish I could accomplish with ministry and church music what Dr. Scoville has. But we serve the same God, right? Wish I could accomplish in the pastorate what God's used Brother Stevens, Brother Love, men like that to do. You know, Brother Jeremy, wish I could serve in missions, or he might be thinking of other missionaries that have been used of the Lord and influenced him. You know, whatever it is, it's the same God that we serve. It's the same God who can help you and me, that helped our mentors or those that went before us, that helped Joshua and Moses. But what was the requirement of God? Now, just because I wanted to keep my outline the same, I have a P. What are the prerequisites of God? All right, the word prerequisite means prior requirement. That's what it means. You got to do this first. Okay, prerequisite. Usually that, that term only gets used in probably an education sense. But what is the prerequisite? Verse 6, be strong and of a good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear to their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Look at verse 9. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Interesting phrase here, and I'm going to dive into it a little bit, but this is not the first time that this phrase has been used. Would you turn back a couple of pages with me to Deuteronomy 31? Deuteronomy 31. In verse number 1 of Deuteronomy 31, we see Moses went and spake these words to all Israel. So this first section was directed to the entire congregation of the nation of Israel. You see in verse 6, be strong and of a good courage, fear not nor be afraid of them, for the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee nor forsake thee. That sounds pretty similar to what we just read in Joshua, right? Now look at verse 7. Moses called Joshua and said unto him, in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of a good courage. For thou must go with this people unto the land which the Lord hath sworn unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it. Look down with me in verse number 23 of the same chapter, 31 and verse 23. And he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge and said, be strong and of a good courage, for thou shalt bring the children of Israel into the land which I swear unto them, and I will be with thee. See, God had told Moses this is what he needed to do. Moses has prepped Joshua. Why? Because Joshua needed it. Why do you repeat certain things to your kids over and over again? Because they got it down? Because they need to hear it? Because they've heard it before, but there's still a need in this area, right? That's why we repeat certain things. Now, sometimes we repeat things because we want it to stick in their head. I tell students at some of my classes, I hope you hear me saying this in your sleep at night, because that means it's getting, it's getting in and hopefully sticking for the future. But this was Moses's admonition right here when Moses knows the handoff is happening and he's publicly handing off the position of leadership to Joshua before God takes him home. Well, then back in Joshua chapter 1, we see the same thing three times. Be strong and of a good courage. Be strong and very courageous. Verse 9, be strong and of a good courage. These two words are synonyms. Both of them mean to be strong or to be stout. If you look them up in a Bible dictionary, both of them, one of the first definitions is going to be strong. You can say it this way, be strong and be strong. Okay? So the idea is strengthen yourself. Be strong. There's two ways to be strong. One way is to increase your physical strength, whether you squeeze a little device to improve your grip strength, or you lift weights or strap weights to your waist and run. I'm going to strengthen my muscles in some way or another. There's another way to strengthen yourself. And that's to tie yourself off to something that's stronger than you, right? And tie myself, I can tie myself off. I watched the guys doing a roof project over at the college a few weeks ago. First thing they did was they went up to the top center of the roof and they attached anchor points and then they used straps and harnesses. Why? Because if you happen to go over the edge, it's about 20 feet to a very abrupt stop. And so, you know, they tied themselves off. They were strengthening themselves. But, this is garden season, right? Plant tomatoes. How do you strengthen? Are tomato stalks, as the plants come up, are they inherently strong? No, a good windstorm, snap, right? And then when they get fruit on them, it's even more vulnerable, right? How do you strengthen tomato plants? Do you put them on a workout regimen? No, what do? You drive a stake or a cage or both. You kind of tie the branches off to the cage as they grow up. What are you doing? Strengthening. And what I'm saying is sometimes we become strong simply by tying ourselves off to the promise of God. Like somebody in a flood that hangs on to a telephone pole so they don't get swept further downstream. Like tying off a plant to a stake or even a young tree that gets staked until it gets established to be strong. But it's interesting here. These two words are used interchangeably, but there's also a couple of ways in which it's different. Very often when this first word that's translated be strong is used, the object is of the hands, and it's the idea of be strong, like to take hold of a task, or be strong and go accomplish this task, or take hold of this, and the imagery is with the hands. The second term, to be of good courage, means to be stout or strong or to be bold, but it's interesting to me that very often it's translated to be firm or to strengthen. In a negative sense, it's used to harden, like hardening the mind or hardening the heart. So to me, it's almost like one is a little more physical and one is a little more internal. Be strong, like go grab hold of the task and get to work, and be of good courage deals with the internals, okay? The second word, to be of good courage, it's used in Isaiah 41:10. When I read this, it'll probably be familiar to some of you. Fear not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. I will help thee. I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. It was an interesting contrast that I found in a few places here where, let me see if I can find the verse because I wrote it down so I could quote it correctly. Yeah, Isaiah 35 in verse number 3. It's almost kind of a throwaway to us, but in Isaiah 35 in verse number 3, we read both of these words in a different context, and I'm going to read it to you so I get it correct. Strengthen the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. The first verb, strengthen the hands, is the verb be strong. And then where it says confirm the feeble knees, that's the second verb, be of good courage. Okay? Now, what's the parallel? The same or similar idea. We see that same phrasing in Job chapter 4 about strengthen the feeble knees. At the college, during chapel, most days I sit on the platform. So, I have a different perspective. Somebody gets up to sing, and they stand behind the pulpit, and they sing. Or somebody gets up to preach, and they stand behind the pulpit. For the most part, it looks, pretty normal. I've had more than one fella come to me after chapel at lunch or whatever and say, could you see my knees? I'm like, no, I wasn't looking at your knees, But, you can look like you got it all together, and if you really don't have it all together on the inside, what's going on with the knees, right? And that's kind of an outward sign of a lack of firmness, right? But the idea here, be strong and of good courage, has both the outward, go take hold of the task, and that inward resolve of heart and mind that I will do this and God will help me and I will not quit and I will not be sidetracked. And why was it repeated 3 times? Because Joshua needed it. You know who else needs it? Me. Most of you. We need to be reminded of that, don't we? Go take hold of the task and be resolved to trust God and not be deterred, not be sidetracked, not be convinced to quit, not give up. Be strong and of a good courage. If I could say it this way, and we'll have to finish this out and move on next time. What is the prerequisite? What's the requirement of God? If I use the title of the familiar song, trust and obey. He says, basically, trust God and go take the land. That's what he was told to do. And that's what we need to do as well. It's time for us to wrap it up for today. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for your word. Thank you for the example of Joshua and how we can benefit from the same encouragement, promises, instructions. Lord, help us to take it to heart. Help us to be people who are servants of you, servants to others. And Lord, help us to trust you with a resolve of heart and mind that will not be sidetracked with difficulties or disappointments. We thank you now.